Okay, welcome back. We'll take another look at the pandemic and what's going on with it. I saw there's a little university here in town, 6,000-7,000 students. There were some students on campus, not many, but some. And we're watching the entire back to school movement to see what's going to happen. Let me find my little section here I wanted to look at. There it is. Okay. The White House, this is comic book time. The White House defends hitting 200,000 dead Americans, allegedly all from coronavirus or complications thereof. We were expecting 2 million, said the White House. So we did good with 200,000. That's the word. Okay. Trump declares coronavirus affects virtually nobody. All right, there's another one for you. Now we have another mass letter here from a single letter, I guess, from a mass of doctors is a better way to put it. No medical justification for emergency measures. Hundreds of doctors, health professionals, urges an end. This is, I think, a UK story. Urging an end to the lockdowns over there. Mark Cuban says Americans should get a $1,000 stimulus check every 2 weeks. That's a guaranteed universal income for sure. Let's see here. Despair at the CDC after Trump's influence. I have never seen morale this low before, said one of the spokespeople there. And we've got one more here now. U.S. drug maker launches final COVID-19 vaccine trial with 60,000 volunteers. Oh, let me just throw this one in, too. This is important. There's a lot of depressed young people out there, and they've thrown caution to the winds, and they're having sex and drinking and doing everything they want. Whatever. Probably doing a lot of things they don't want to do. Chlamydia and gonorrhea rates in younger U.S. women have skyrocketed as health experts raise alarm over a drop in tests for those two awful diseases during the pandemic. So for all of you out there who are out having a good time, you're probably sharing a lot more than your physical self. Okay? Just keep that in mind. All right, Henry, welcome back. How are you?
Well, not too bad. Better than Trump, I guess. He's not doing well at all. He's having a hard time. He came to Pittsburgh yesterday. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing for Pittsburgh from the crowd.
You were in the first row, right?
But he did. Nah, it's over in Moon Township, and he had to go out to the airport, and it was pretty crowded, and nobody's wearing masks, and they're shoulder to shoulder, and I just watched on TV. It was more than enough. his rhetoric sounded like 1930s Germany, but as far as the pandemic is concerned, he was in denial. You know, he says, you know, again, that hardly anybody under younger has any problems with it. So nobody gets sick from it if they're 18 and under. Mm-hmm. And it affects virtually nobody. That was his statement. And you know, on a related note, he was here in Pittsburgh, and while he was saying that nobody gets sick, this younger, there's a story about a football player from Pittsburgh went to Ohio State, and even though they have called off, at least for now, the fall football season in the Big Ten, Ohio State's in the Big Ten. He was at school, and he was in the dorms, and his classmate, or dormmate, I should say, roommate, basically started to cough, and he figured, well, he's got a cold or something, and then he started feel a little something. He thought it was allergies. And then it got progressively worse, and he called his mother, and she, you know, basically said, well, if you don't get better within a couple of days, I'm going to come and get you and take you to the doctor. And he said, well, maybe you should come and get me now. And he said he's not a complainer, and that if he said to get him now, he couldn't be doing that well. And she brought him back to Pittsburgh and took him into one of the quick places because they do COVID testing. And they brought him in, and he had a fever. And I said, well, they should probably do a chest x-ray. And they did a chest x-ray. He had pneumonia. And then she rushed him to the ER, and he died. So he was 20 years old, football player, and passed his physical, was in good health, good shape, and good health. And he,
another tragedy. Damn, I'm sick
right,
of these.
Right, but Trump said that, you know, younger people, not a problem. And hardly anybody gets sick. It's under, he used 18 as a cutoff, but, you know, 18, 20 doesn't really matter.
I assume, I didn't hear you mention, was he tested? Did he come back positive? I didn't hear that. Did you just die of pneumonia?
Oh, I'm sure he was tested. No. You don't die of pneumonia.
Not
you
usually.
Pneumonia is a result of an infection. So you can have viral pneumonia, you can have bacterial pneumonia, you can have mycoplasma-caused pneumonia. So you don't just die of pneumonia, you die of whatever organism is infecting your lungs that leads to the buildup of fluid. The pneumonia is just fluid in your lungs. The fluid in your lungs is because you're mounting an immune response against some organism. He had COVID. I mean, this testing thing, you had mentioned the other day something about you didn't think the PCR tests were accurate. I don't know.
No, that wasn't me. That was a news story. Oh, I'll dig it up and send it to you. It just said that the PCR test, I don't want to quote it because I can't remember. Let me find it. I'll go looking for it here. But it's been around. It's not the first one I've seen. So.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm just wondering where they are, because there's nothing in the literature about it. You know, I wouldn't doubt that some wacko news story has some wacko story, but
let me find it. I'll find it.
There hasn't been any issue with the PCR test. I mean, you can get a false negative on a PCR test on somebody who basically got infected and the virus went to their lungs and they took a nasal pharyngeal swab of their nose and it didn't have any virus. I mean, it was negative because they already cleared the virus. So you can get a negative for a given site in somebody that is infected, but I haven't seen any issues with the PCR test. PCR test
is 21st.
Generally the most most sensitive of the tests. And
I know a little bit about PCR. I'm not Nyman, but I put out one of the first books on HIV/AIDS, and I studied all the Western blot and the ELISA and all that anyway.
Right. But the PCR test for COVID is a reliable test. I haven't seen any issues with the PCR test. That's why
it is.
I was wondering when you mentioned it, what they were talking about.
It's one of several. This is the newest one. If the PCR test is unreliable, why are health officials demanding the public be tested? All right. In the months since COVID-19 and the panic began, health authorities around the world have told the public to get tested to help track the spread of SARS-CoV-2. However, as fear and hysteria subside, the scientific community and public at large are calling into question the efficacy of the test used to determine a patient's status. Now, hold on. This article is a brief examination of the evidence that the PCR test is unreliable and should not be used as a determinant for the number of COVID-19 cases or as a factor in political decisions. I'll just send this over to you.
The intro is utter nonsense. It's a political statement. There's no science there.
Everything's been politicized.
What's the name of the other?
You know that?
Right. Right.
Everything.
So when you come on the air and you talk about, well, there's a problem with the PCR test. There isn't. In a parallel universe of this utter nonsense, there's a problem with the PCR test.
No,
there's not a problem with the PCR test in the scientific community.
Okay. What I said was, not speaking for me or you, I simply read the title of the news story. It's part of the news texture. It's my duty to report these things. They can be discounted and buried. That's fine. But it's part of the news fabric.
Right.
So that's all I did. I didn't make any statements.
Just to clarify, that's not news. That's a propaganda piece. There's lots of propaganda out there. It's utter nonsense. And
hey,
I can
tell, Henry, the wording in the intro. What I do is so difficult to wade through this crap to try to figure out which is even worth looking at to discount, not to prove anything. It ain't easy. So I hear what you're saying. Go ahead.
So, the intro that you just read, the guy's making a whole bunch of assumptions. And there's been no data. If the PCR test didn't work, it would be news, and everybody would know about it.
I think it's asinine to say it doesn't work. That's me talking. It's asinine.
Right. And that's what. So this guy is going to do an analysis starting with a false claim.
False claim
is that it doesn't work. And then why are they relying upon it? And I'm kind of curious. This is almost sounding like the wacko story that says you have to isolate the virus. You can't do a PCR test. And that's exactly what I think you're reading. You're talking about the utter nonsense that I talked about maybe a month ago, where there were these whack jobs out there. And that's all they are. They're total nuts that are saying that you can't believe a PCR test unless you isolate the virus.
I remember that.
And I told you there were 100,000 sequences
of the virus. At the time, 90,000 something.
Right,
yes.
Right. Well, it's like 106 now.
Sure so, it is. Yeah.
So, there were 90,000 sequences at the time. The point was that the vast majority of those 90,000 directly sequence the sample. They don't bother isolating the virus because they don't have to isolate the virus. Because when they get the sequence, that's not just a plus or a minus.
Right.
That's the entire 30,000 letters in the genetic sequence of the virus. And it exactly matches the sequence that you get if you isolate the virus. So there's no difference between doing a PCR test and isolating the virus. So that was utter nonsense a month ago. Nothing has changed other than there's more wackos that are basically taking this on faith and saying that the PCR test is not reliable and therefore you can't use it to estimate how many cases there are. So that's his premise. That's what you just read. This guy is trying to say, well, the test doesn't work, so you can't say we have cases.
So the fact that
you've got 200,000 dead in the U.S. and you don't even need a PCR test. You can just look at excess deaths and you can just look at how many people have died in the United States, in each of these states, at what time of the year, and you can see if you go back over the years, you don't get excess deaths. unless you have a very bad flu season.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do, you have excess deaths in the winter, like usually January. You don't have excess deaths in August. You don't have excess deaths in July. You don't have excess deaths in April or May or June. And the U.S. has excess deaths in all of those months,
mm-hmm.
in most mm-hmm. states. And it sometimes is way above the line to be classified as an excess death. People are dying. There's 200,000 deaths. So these guys are trying to prove that the people that are dead didn't die from COVID because they're using a PCR test that doesn't have to isolate the virus to identify the presence of the virus.
Right.
And they're saying that if you use a PCR test and it's positive, that doesn't mean they have the virus because you didn't isolate the virus. So I'm sure, the more I think about it, that's exactly what this wacko article was mm-hmm. talking about
well,
that you quoted.
It's in your mailbox, so after the program you can take a look and then write to me and let me know.
Well, I've already convinced myself. I am 100% sure that when uh-huh. he's talking about a suspect PCR test, it's mm-hmm. not because all of a sudden some scientist
mm-hmm.
found that, you know, these PCR tests are giving false positives. That's because those whack jobs that I talked about a month ago that were trying to say you have to isolate the virus to have a valid result are nuts. They don't know what they're talking about. They're people that
well,
know
nothing
about
sequences.
There
are a lot of people
sequences.
That fit that category nowadays, and
yeah,
that's what's
I know,
making
I know.
This so difficult on the Internet
I
to
know.
Try to keep things reasonably segregated.
No, it isn't that difficult because they don't have anything to quote. They've got a guy that puts up a YouTube post. And he says, my analysis. And he doesn't know anything about sequences. He doesn't know anything about PCR. He doesn't know anything about viruses. He doesn't know anything about anything other than how to make a video and put it on YouTube. And get followers to repeat it.
This was not a video. This was a print story I sent you. It's not a video.
Right.
Anyway.
No, he's quoting the video. I gave you the video a month ago.
Oh, same one?
The video.
Okay.
It's
okay.
All the same story. It's the same story. It's the identical
so
story.
The identical story.
Yeah. Says that if you don't isolate the virus, the
uh-huh.
positive PCR test results doesn't mean anything. That's the bottom uh-huh. line. There's uh-huh. YouTube videos to say it. There's guys that say they're MDs to say it.
Uh-huh.
There's guys that say, I did an analysis and this is my conclusion to say it. And there's nothing in the scientific literature that says it. There's no bona fide scientist that says it. There are whack jobs that say it. They say it and they put up YouTube videos and other guys write print articles like the guy you're quoting. And I can tell you from just the intro that you read that this guy is talking about a PCR test without, they're talking about a PCR test without isolating the virus. And here, he's talking about the cycle threshold on the PCR test.
Mm-hmm.
And some labs report out a 40 cycle threshold, and if they get a positive at 40, it means it's a tiny, tiny, tiny amount of virus.
Mm-hmm.
And because this is a positive, we don't know any different. So they're saying that the test is too sensitive to give you a positive, and that's why is
right. Well, look
unreliable.
At it after the program. Here's I think his punchline. I'll just do this and you can wrap it up. I've got things to cover here. In the UK Parliament and scientists have concerns about PCR tests. That's the section header. In the first weeks of September, a number of important revelations regarding the PCR test have come to light. First, new research from the University of Oxford's Centre for Evidence-Based Medicine and the University of the West of England found that the PCR test poses the potential for false positives when testing for COVID-19. Professor Carl Hennigan, one of the authors of the study, Viral Cultures for COVID-19 Infectivity Assessment, a Systematic Review, said there was a risk that an increase in testing in the UK will lead to an increase in the risk of, quote, sample contamination and thus an increase in COVID-19 cases. Last sentence. The team reviewed evidence from 25 studies where virus specimens had positive PCR tests. The researchers state that the, quote, genetic photocopying technique scientists use to magnify the sample of genetic material collected is so sensitive it could be picking up fragments of dead virus from previous infections. The researchers reach a similar conclusion as Dr. David Peirce, namely that, last quote, a binary yes-no approach to the interpretation RT-PCR unvalidated against viral culture will result in false positives with segregation of large numbers of people who are no longer infectious and hence not a threat to public health, end quote. End of my quoting, but it's in the story. So, you know, I'd like to hear, go through it, and I get it already,
yeah,
what you're saying, of course.
Well, I can tell you what these guys are saying, and it's just nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically saying, oh, you got it, and you're picking it up, and it's very sensitive, and mm-hmm. maybe you're picking up virus from a previous infection.
Particles.
And
sure.
You're calling it a positive.
Right.
And that may happen on rare occasion. That's mm-hmm. that's not what people are finding when the numbers are going up. These guys are trying to downplay what's going on in the UK now, because UK is having a resurgence in cases. So this sensitive test that you get itsy bitsy amounts of virus wasn't mm-hmm. picking up itsy bitsy amounts of virus last month, but they're picking up itsy bitsy amounts of virus this month. And these guys say, well, I don't believe it, you know, because you might have da 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 da. They're picking up the virus because they've got a resurgence of the virus.
Oh, it's big. It's roaring all over the UK.
Right. And so these guys are going to deny it because they're going to take the exception and they're going to mm-hmm. say it's a really sensitive test and mm-hmm. you might pick up something. This little particle that's there from a prior infection. Well, the numbers had gone down. They hadn't had infections for a while. So the number of people that are going to still have leftover virus from 2 months ago that you're picking up is very few.
It's a fraction. And I understand that.
And it doesn't have anything to do with anything other than get these guys.
They're on the doorstep.
Apparently,
Boris Johnson, they're on the doorstep of a major lockdown again in the UK. It's that bad there now. So this is not a joke.
And so these guys are doing the same thing they're doing here. They're trying mm-hmm. to find out reasons to ignore the data. And they're taking an exception and trying to say that that's the rule. And it isn't. The test is sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
But the vast majority of positives are really positive.
Sure.
Okay,
very good.
This is just
muddying the waters is all it's doing, ultimately.
Right. So getting back to the United States here, there was a hearing in the Senate that was kind of the last hearing before the election. And And they had another battle between Anthony Fauci and Rand Paul. And Rand Paul is...
Oh, today, yes. Yeah. I didn't read that. What happened? I didn't read it.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I think... didn't he have a fight with his neighbor who knocked him off his lawn?
That was,
or something?
Six, 8 months ago, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think he must have hit his head because it's affecting his thinking and it hasn't really cleared up yet. Because he's making this argument. He's saying, well, you know, New York had the highest number of deaths and they wanted to flatten the curve. But when you flatten the curve, you don't really lower the number of cases. You just spread the number of cases out. And New York had this highest number of deaths and it showed that the lockdown didn't work. And there's other areas of the country that have lots of cases now. And he was using that argument to say that the lockdown isn't effective. And what happened in New York, what happened in New York was a very straightforward situation. And what was going on is New York was getting infected with the Italian strain in the spring. And when they were doing it, the CDC wasn't looking at the East Coast. They were focused on the West Coast, and they were looking for virus coming from China. And they weren't paying any attention to what was going on in Europe. And I remember on February 21st, it was the anniversary of the check-in at the Metropole Hotel. There were all of these cases showing up in Europe, and they all had links back to northern Italy. And then it was spreading to North America.
That's
North
right. You were. I don't know if you were first, but you were one of the first to point that out on national radio.
Right,
no question.
Right. Right. And it was showing up everywhere except for the U.S. And the reason it wasn't showing up in the U.S. because the U.S. wasn't testing for it. And so the Italian strain came to New York. It was spreading in New York. And there wasn't any testing going on in New York because all the emphasis was on virus coming from China in on the West Coast. And so they ended up getting a big buildup of the virus and was spreading rapidly. And by the time they realized what was going on, it had already done all of this silent spreading. And then they had this major outbreak. But they did do the lockdown. They did get it under control. And now the New York, I had read this, and it's still continuing, that virtually every day the number of deaths in the entire state of New York is in the single digits. There were 5 deaths reported today. There were 4 deaths reported yesterday. There was 1 death reported. I mean, 3 days ago, there was 1 death in the entire state. The day before, there were 2 deaths. The day before that, there were 2 deaths. The day before that, there were 10 deaths. That 10 deaths was, I think, the first time in probably 3 or 4 weeks that they had a day that they had double digits, and it was just barely double digits. It was 10. So they have the virus under control in New York. They have it under control in New Jersey. They have it under control in Connecticut. So that it worked. They put the lockdown. They got the virus under control. And now the virus is going up in something like 30 some odd states. And it doesn't include the area that was hardest hit because they basically did a lockdown. And they basically still do a lot of testing. So the positive rate in New York today is below 1%. So they do a lot of testing. And they don't get that many viruses. They don't get that many positives. And they control it. And so Rand Paul says, well, the reason they don't have it now is because they've got herd immunity. And Anthony Fauci
Rand Paul conferred herd immunity on New York and New Jersey. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Let's listen to Rand do that. I got to hear this.
Not for economic lockdown, yet your mitigation recommendations from dating to baseball to restaurants to movie theaters have led to this economic lockdown. Do you have any second thoughts about your mitigation recommendations, considering the evidence that despite all of the things we've done in the U.S., our death rate is essentially worse than Sweden, equivalent to the less developed world that is unable to do any of the things that you've been promoting? Do you have any second thoughts? Are you willing to look at the data that countries that did very little actually have a lower death rate than the United States?
You know, Senator, I'd be happy at a different time to sit down and go over detail. You've said a lot of different things. You've compared us to Sweden. And there are a lot of differences. And you said, well, you know, there are a lot of differences between Sweden. But compare Sweden's death rate to other comparable Scandinavian countries. It's worse. So I don't think it's appropriate to compare Sweden with us. Yes, we have, I think in the beginning, we've done things based on the knowledge we had at the time. And hopefully, and I am, and my colleagues are humble enough and modest enough to realize that as new data comes, you make different recommendations. But I don't regret saying that the only way we could have really stopped the explosion of infection was by essentially, when I say shutting down, I mean essentially having the physical separation and the kinds of recommendations that we've made.
But you've been a big fan of Cuomo and the shutdown in New York. You've lauded New York for their policy. New York had the highest death rate in the world. How could we possibly be jumping up and down and saying, oh, Governor Cuomo did a great job? He had the worst death rate in the world.
No, you misconstrued that, Senator, and you've done that repetitively in the past. They got hit very badly. They've made some mistakes. Right now, if you look at what's going on right now, the things that are going on in New York to get their test positivity 1% or less is because they are looking at the guidelines that we have put together from the task force of the four or five things of masks, social distancing, outdoors more than indoors, avoiding crowds, and washing hands.
Or they've developed enough community immunity that they're no longer having the pandemic because they have enough immunity in New York City to actually stop.
I challenge that, Senator. I would like to be able to do this because this happens with Senator Rand all the time. You were not listening to what the director of the CDC said, that in New York it's about 22%. If you believe 22% is herd immunity, I believe you're alone in that.
There's also the pre-existing immunity of those who have cross-reactivity, which is about a third of the public in many estimates from studies, which would actually get you to about 3%.
I'd like to talk to you about that also, because there was a study that recently came out that pre-existing immunity to coronaviruses that are common cold do not cross-react with the COVID-19.
End of story. Okay, there you go.
So the point is that they had a lot of deaths back in April. They have virtually no deaths now. That's because they got it under control. They were able to keep it under control. And 20% doesn't give herd immunity. And you don't have cross reactivity between a common cold and the coronavirus, the COVID virus, and that's the reason the PCR tests
Even though they're still coronaviruses. Okay, all right.
Correct, and that's why the PCR works. Otherwise, you would have false positives, and you'd be picking up cold viruses. But the PCR tests are specific, and the antibody tests are the same thing. They looked at the antibody tests, and they saw that the antibody tests, if they used it on people, on samples that were collected prior to the beginning of the year, so that they could not have had COVID, they had virtually no activity. So they didn't have antibodies that would be picked up in their antibody tests. That's because they don't cross-react. because if they cross-reacted, they'd get false positive. They would take their antibody test, and they would use it on samples that were collected last year, and they would get positives. And the positives wouldn't be from COVID. They'd be from coronavirus, cold viruses, and it was less than 1%. So there's no herd immunity from having a cold that prevents you from getting COVID. And
I wouldn't think so.
Well, that's not what Rand Paul said. He said that 25% of the people have had COVID.
22.
No. 22 was COVID. Rand Paul said in addition to the 22% for COVID, there's another 25% from cold viruses. Mm-hmm. So if you add the 25% to the 22%, then you're up to 47%. And so, you know, you said you wanted to get to 60%. That might be just a little bit on the low side. You might already have 60%. So he's trying to say that New York has herd immunity, and that's why New York doesn't have any cases.
Oh, he can't make that statement. No, he did.
He did make the statement.
I know, but it's completely wrong to do that.
Right. But that's what his argument was. And then speaking of herd immunity, Deborah Brix is concerned now. Debbie's considering, doesn't really know what to do because you got your buddy Atlas on the committee, and he's got Trump's ear, and he's saying that you don't need a mask and that, you know, there's nothing wrong with people that aren't at high risk of getting the virus and of building up herd immunity. And she's just listening to this and thinking that maybe she shouldn't really be on the task force.
Debbie right. Birx will probably absent herself fairly soon, I would think. Wouldn't be surprised.
Well,
I feel really sorry about that football player story. That's very sad. It's funny how one death can take on proportions when it's isolated, but, you know, 1,000 or 200,000 deaths become a statistic. They're all tragedies, all of them.
Yeah. Well, they got a companion story on a 28-year-old nurse who basically normally does OBGYN, and she was called into service for coronavirus. It wasn't that long ago, and she
don't tell me she died. Oh no. Yeah. See, I'm sick. I'm really tired of this.
28-year-old nurse. So Trump is saying that. Trump specifically said in his rally that the only people that were really getting sick were older people with heart problems. and he says, and the reason they're dying is because of their heart problems. So he's not saying that the virus attacks the heart. He's saying that the virus and causes significant damage.
He's saying that the people that are dying
already have a problem with their heart. So they're old and they have heart problems and they get infected with the virus and they die. No, he's saying they die because they had heart problems. They didn't die because they got infected. So he's saying that the older people that die and have heart problems are counted as COVID deaths. But they didn't even die from the virus. So he's basically saying the virus isn't killing anybody. part of the reason he's saying that is because he has rallies like he had in Pittsburgh. He had like 4,000 people there. And it was open air. It was kind of at the airport and was in an outdoor stadium. But every seat was full, and these seats are, you know, stadium seats. They're not, you know, 6 feet apart or 3 feet apart, or they're not apart at all. They're all right next to each other, and every seat is filled. And the only ones wearing masks are the ones that are sitting behind the president, because A, they're closer to the president, and B, they're the ones that show up on the camera, on the film. So when they film Trump, they see who's sitting behind him. And the ones sitting behind him, even them, they didn't all have masks. Or some of them had masks, you know, hanging down and not really covering their
face. Yeah, I saw
a
couple of them like that.
Around their neck. And the ones that are out in the audience where the vast majority, I mean, behind him, he might have 200 people. And in front of him, he's got 4,000 people. And the number of masks on the 200 is about equal to the number of masks on the 4,000. That virtually nobody in the 4,000 is wearing a mask. And they, even though they are outside, they're sitting in one place. They're screaming and yelling. And they're packed in where every seat has a body yelling and spitting out virus. And so this is in Moon County. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, Moon County's already had enough problems with long-term care facilities where they were having a lot of deaths. And they're going to end up having more deaths.
Where's Moon County?
Moon County is just west of Pittsburgh. I mean, it's kind of suburban Pittsburgh, but it's more rural. It's where the airport is. The international airport is out in Moon County. And
nice name for a county. I like that. Moon County.
Yeah, they got Moon and they got Mars. There's the Mars and Moon are not that far apart. But
yeah, they got Mars County. Well, that's funny.
Well, it's actually a city. Moon is a county. Well, Moon's also kind of a township also. So, I mean, it's a township, and then there's a whole county. Moon Township is in Moon County. So they got both of those. And it's Mars, they just have Mars, the city of Mars, or it might be Mars Township. They don't have a Mars County, but it's not that big. But they are kind of suburban. They're both suburban Pittsburgh, and they're both one's northeast and one's kind of due east. I'm sorry, northwest and due west.
Yeah, you could have been living in Mars. Coming to us live from Mars tonight, Dr. Henry Nyman. That would have been fun.
We did go to Mars to play soccer, but we didn't. Yeah, I never lived there, but anyway, they were in the same division as for example, so we went to Mars a lot, but not to live, just go to soccer.
Nice town, Mars.
Nah, it's out there. It's not close in. It's pretty far out.
I'm going to look it up.
Again, more rural than Mars, Pennsylvania. It's northwest of Pittsburgh.
Oh, it's not and very attractive. Excuse me for anybody living in Mars now. It's not an architectural winner. No. Its population was 1,700 people.
Right. I mean, the high school is there. The high school's got probably 1,700 students. So it's kind of more rural, and it isn't that close in.
Wait a minute. You know what they have in the little city park downtown? They have a little flying saucer.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. I don't remember seeing the saucer, but that sounds right.
They do.
that would not surprise me in the least. So anyway, getting back to the pandemic, the numbers are going up. Today there were about 40,000 cases. There were over 1,000 deaths. Yesterday there were almost 50,000 cases. So some of these cases are bouncing around a little bit, though. The reporting is getting very uneven. I suspect that the unevenness is due to the colleges, and so they're moving these, you know, positives around because they're technically supposed to be reporting the positives in the hometowns, and so they'll be getting reports in throughout the country of positives of citizens, actually students in this case, who are at a school somewhere else and get tested and are positive, and so they're pulling the data in from a bunch of different locations, and so there's delays, and there's probably some batch reporting of it. So all of a sudden they've got all the college data, and they report it on one day, and they see a big jump, and then the other days it falls back down again because they don't report, you know, they don't compile everything every day. They kind of do it batch-wise. So the reporting has been a little bit on the bumpier side, but there were 47,769 cases yesterday, and today it's a little over 40,000. Yesterday there were 914 deaths, and today there a little bit over 1,000. So the numbers are bouncing around a little bit, but they are edging upwards. And actually, I was reading the wrong day. There were actually 50,000 cases yesterday, and there were 51,000 the day before. Today was a little bit lower. There was 40,000. But the cases were 900 yesterday and 1,084 today. And that's not even the final number because the California always comes a little bit late. So the numbers are going up. The situation as far as a plan is there basically is no plan. Everybody knows you're starting to get a little bit cooler. And I think something like 33 of the 50 states have reported increases in the 7-day rolling average now.
All right.
And people are starting to worry that, yeah, this is the leading edge. Some of this is probably due to the Labor Day holiday. So it typically takes 3-4 weeks before you start seeing the numbers showing up at the state labs because people have to first get sick enough to go to the doctor and then they have to get tested. Sometimes it takes a while to get the test results back. But they're starting to creep up and people are realizing that, this may not be a good indicator. And the stock market, I think, is starting to realize that this isn't going to be going away anytime soon. Oh yeah, the other thing that's new is on the vaccine front. You had mentioned another company was entering its final phase, which is just phase three. But that's Johnson & Johnson. And Johnson & Johnson's product is another vaccine that's growing adenovirus, but in their case, you only need one shot. And so this is the first one to enter phase three that doesn't require two. So the three that are in front of it, the AstraZeneca, Pfizer, and Moderna, are all require two injections, either 21 or 28 days apart. But the CDC is, and FDA are kind of, their reputations are in tatters right now. That, you know, there's just too many politicians changing the data, the reports and the data, and anybody that's looking at it knows that, you know, half of the stuff they're putting out isn't science-based anymore, political calculations. And that's probably going to backfire on the vaccine because the number of people saying that they would take the vaccine is continuing to drop. And so now they're in a public relations situation, which is not good. It's kind of like, well, if you get the vaccine, but nobody's taking it, it isn't going to do any good.
No.
So now they're tightening up regulations on what the criteria has to be met before they'll give an emergency approval. Right. And as a result, it's not going to get, there aren't going to be any approvals in October or November or probably even December. The first approvals probably are not going to be till next year now. And so the vaccine is not going to come to the rescue. The latest projection is just under 400,000 dead by the beginning of the year. And that's kind of where we stand for now.
All right. Well, so, as you mentioned, Debbie Birx is distressed and wondering how she can remain on the task force. So she's correct. Probably going to take off here pretty soon. These are crazy times.
Right. But, I mean, the task force is what it is as long as Trump is holding on to the presidency. Although, today he said he's going to get rid of the vote. That he doesn't believe the vote. So he's going to throw out all the votes and let the Supreme Court determine who's president. And that's his plan. His plan is to forget about.
This is going to ignite. You think the Breonna Taylor thing is bad? Watch. Just watch.
Well,
after November 3rd,
he's already said, mm-hmm. you know, will he make a pledge that there'll be a peaceful transfer of power if he loses?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, you know, I don't like to vote, and I don't like the ballot, and you know, we're gonna. I mean, there's not gonna be a transfer of power. We're gonna throw out the ballot, and I'm just gonna stay in power. There won't be any transfer. So he's already said that he's king. He's gotta stay there.
Well, he's got a 5-4 Supreme Court. That's what he's counting on.
He doesn't care what the vote is. He's gonna just say that this vote. Vote by mail is too easy to tamper with, and so they shouldn't count any of the ballots by mail, and the Supreme Court should just determine who's president.
All right. Well, it's not going to be boring. It's going to be crazy. So we'll be there watching it with you and for you as best we can. Thank you, Henry, as always. Have a good night.
Take care.
All right.